is a potentially dangerous gift, especially since we are essentially by nature and by birth sinful people. The Bible offers a number of solutions to problems that we face, a number of preventative keys. And, you know, just as the magazine industry thrives on the idea of a quick fix, and you can be mesmerized, you stand in a grocery store checkout at what the headlines on the front page of the magazines offer to solve in one or two or three quick steps. I mean, we're obviously open to the possibility that there's a few keys missing, a few secret ingredients to making any aspect of life better. Here is a key that comes to Scripture enormous importance. And here's an enormous upgrade that you can bring to your life just this simply by committing yourself to not talking so much, not saying as many words as you normally say. Now, there's a sort of person who seems not to say very many words, and you got to be careful with that sort of person, because it might be that although they don't say very many words in some settings, there are times, if you're that sort of person, and perhaps it's good for you to be that sort of person, still there might be times when you do get talking, in which case you need to be sort of specialized in your focus and say, in that particular setting, I myself become a blabbermouth, and so I need to practice this principle. There are times when silence is not appropriate. We'll see this too. There are times when you need to talk, in which case you got to play the game. You got to go into this necessity of speaking with a very clear awareness of what risks you're running by opening your mouth and talking. So let's look together at the book of Proverbs and some principles that emerge there on the subject of talking less than we are inclined to talk. What wisdom says essentially here on the outline is that restraining your lips, that's one of the biblical phrases, to restrain your lips from speaking so much is a simple and certain way to improve three really significant things. So here it is. Here's the sort of the quick fix. One thing, one practice by which you can make a significant improvement to three very important things. And so there's three lines. You see three major lines there and then subpoints in Roman numerals. The first major issue of improvement that you should take a note of is this. Restraining your lips is a simple and certain way to improve your relationship with God. Well, how important is that? Restraining your lips is a simple and certain way to improve your relationship with God. Now, no one should say that that's a small issue. We should recognize that that's a big issue. If there is a God at all, and I'm working on the strong hunch that there is, if there is a God at all, then your relationship to God is the single most important thing about you, because your survival depends upon you being in and staying in a good relationship to God. Jesus said it this way. He said, this is the essence of eternal life. This is life on the highest plane, that you would know God and Jesus Christ whom God has sent. That was what Jesus said about himself. Knowing God, your relationship to God, is the essence of life, the essence of life lived in the eternal dimension. So there is nothing more important to you than your relationship to God. And one simple and certain way to improve your relationship with God is to learn to put a lid on your words, to speak less. Here are two major considerations as subheadings to this idea that your relationship with God will be improved by you restraining your lips. Number one, you will, this is guaranteed now, you will sin less. To speak less is to sin less. So here's how your relationship with God can be improved. By speaking less, you will sin less. Proverbs chapter 10, verse 19 makes this really plain. I've written it out for you. When there are many words, transgression is unavoidable. Think about that. When there are many words, transgression is unavoidable. But he who restrains his lips is wise. Now you can say that's just a principle, it's not a promise, and we've looked at that already. Yeah, these are principles, but it's a true principle that when there are many words, transgression is unavoidable. So the wise person goes into a situation where there are going to be many words and thinks, I'm going to have to work really hard and be really careful because transgression is practically unavoidable. And this should caution us away from any situation we're in where we are inclined to say to a person, you know, I think you'd feel better if you just let out with it. Go ahead, just get it off your chest. Go ahead, just say what you're thinking. That's very bad advice to give to a person, because there's nothing more important about that person than his relationship to God, and his relationship to God deteriorates as he sins. And if you're inviting a person to just go ahead and say whatever comes into your mind, you're inviting the person into a experience of many words. And where there are many words, transgression is unavoidable. He who restrains his lips is wise. It is not Solomon, the wise man, who said, it'll do you a lot of good to just get something off your chest. Go ahead and say it. That was actually Sigmund Freud. And it's a highly questionable practice in view of this proverb. Here's the proverb. When there are many words, transgression is unavoidable. But he who restrains his lips is wise. Why? Because restraining your lips is a way to sin less. Look at James chapter 1 with me. The verse is right here printed out for you. Two verses put together, verse 19 and verse 26. Obviously, there's some stuff missing in between. But get a load of this. I mean, how much more strongly could the Apostle James put this principle than this? I don't know that he could have said it any more strongly. This is what he says. Let everyone be quick to hear. It's written here on your outline, right? Let everyone be quick to hear, slow to speak, and slow to anger. Slow to speak's right there in the middle, and very significantly. Let everyone be slow to speak. And why should you be slow to speak? Here's what he says. If anyone thinks himself to be religious and yet does not bridle his tongue but deceives his own heart, that man's religion is worthless. This is very strong language. If anyone doesn't bridle his tongue but thinks himself religious, this man's religion is worthless. That's amazing. Isn't that amazing? Think about the strength of that statement, that a person could have a very strong devotional life and be very, very into the worship of God, and you never miss a worship service, and maybe teaches Bible study and hands out evangelistic pamphlets on Richmond Street and does all sorts of, you know, very strong religion things. But if he doesn't bridle his tongue, if he just says whatever comes into his head, his religion suffers. In fact, his religion is worthless. It's as if bridling your tongue is locked into the very heart of true religion, of a true relationship with God. So we're being told it's very, very critical. It's an essential part of godliness that you have control over your speaking. So one way in which your relationship with God will be certainly and simply improved is restraining your lips, because on the one hand, by restraining your lips, you'll sin less. And secondly, sub point number two, restraining your lips will improve your relationship with God because you will be tempted to sin less. And before there's sin, there's temptation to sin. There's the inclination to sin, the possibility of sin. And by speaking less, and by speaking carefully, you will find yourself less provoked to sin. You'll be tempted to sin less. Proverbs chapter 15, verse 1 says, a gentle answer turns away wrath. Or in the King James Version, which is where I first encountered it, it says, a soft answer turneth away wrath. My life was significantly upgraded when I was a teenager because I got into the Peanuts cartoon strip. I'm not exactly sure what that says about me, and I'm certainly dating myself. Calvin and Hobbes came along later in The Far Side, and Herman, and all sorts of other things. But when I was in junior high, there was a group of kids passing around paperbacks. That probably always happens, but they were passing around Peanuts paperbacks, you know, Charlie Brown and Linus and Lucy. And I came across one which absolutely changed my life. I've always sort of identified with Linus, and I'll not bore you with the personal details of why that's true, but I didn't have a blanket. That wasn't the point. But I identified with Linus, and I came across a cartoon where Linus is making a snowman. And Lucy, his older, crabby sister, sees him making the snowman. And she comes over to him and she says, what would you do if I pushed your snowman over? And he says, nothing. What could I do? You're bigger and stronger than I am. You're older. You can run faster. I really couldn't do anything to stop you. I realize full well that I am at your mercy where things of this sort are concerned. All I can do is simply hope that you will choose not to do so. And she looks at him, and she looks at the snowman, and she walks away. And he says, little by little, I'm becoming an expert at the soft answer. Well, I won't be too personal about this, but I identified with Linus in his family demographic. And I came to see as a young teenager that if I would just learn to soften my answers, if I would speak gently when provoked, rather than stirring up anger, I would turn away anger. Because that's what the principle says. A gentle answer, a soft answer, turns away wrath, but a harsh word stirs up anger. I realized that I had been complicating my life and actually causing myself to be tempted to sin more and more by stirring up anger with harsh words. And I have Linus and Charles Schultz and ultimately the book of Proverbs and God to thank for the principle of learning to speak softly, learning to speak less, learning that soft answers turn away wrath and grievous words or harsh words stir up anger. It's really quite striking when you go looking for it how central to the life of godliness this self-control of the tongue is. Think, for example, of the catalog of sin in Romans chapter 3. And the writer, it's Paul, writing to the Hebrews, quotes a whole lot of Old Testament passages to talk about how wicked people are on their own, apart from the grace of God. There is none righteous, not even one. There's none who understands. There's none who seeks for God. There's a long list of sins, actually seven altogether, and four of them are speaking sins. All have turned aside. Together they have become useless. There's none who does good. There's not even one. Their throat is an open grave. With their tongue they keep deceiving. The poison of asps is under their lips, whose mouth is full of cursing and bitterness. When Paul wants to talk about how wicked people can be, four of the seven wickednesses are speaking wickednesses, are sins of the mouth, sins of the tongue. And similarly, in our book, in the book of Proverbs, where there's that poetic thing going on, six things the Lord hates, yea, seven does he hate. That's a figure of speech. There's a list of seven things God hates, and three of the seven are sins of speaking. This is Proverbs chapter 6, and it says in verses 16 to 19, there are six things which the Lord hates, yes, seven which are an abomination to him. Haughty eyes is one. A lying tongue is another. Hands that shed innocent blood is one. A heart that devises wicked plans. Feet that run rapidly evil. A false witness who utters lies. And one who spreads strife among brothers. You can't spread strife among brothers without talking. So there's three times when he speaks of an iniquity which is specifically related to speaking. And we're being warned. When you speak a lot, you sin a lot. When you speak incautiously, you create situations or exacerbate situations where you'll be tempted to sin more. So your relationship with God is greatly impaired by sins of speech and greatly improved by control over your tongue. Okay, that's one thing that improves simply and certainly by restraining your lips. Here's another thing that improves: your reputation. Proverbs chapter 22 says that a good name is to be more desired than great riches, and favor is better than silver and gold. It's a good thing to have a good reputation for a whole lot of reasons. It's a good thing to have a good reputation. And you can improve your reputation among people. You can improve your reputation before people that know you real well and people that just meet you briefly by this practice of restraining your lips. For one thing, point number one, you will appear wise. You will appear wise. Now, it's better to be wise than simply to appear wise, but it's better to appear wise than to appear stupid. So if you can't attain to wisdom, that's a little out of reach. It's best, and it's a significant upgrade to get to the place where you appear to be wise. Proverbs 17 says, "He who restrains his words has knowledge." It means you know something if you restrain your words. He who has a cool spirit, like Linus with a snowman and his sister, he was a cool spirit, is a man of understanding. And it's good to have knowledge and understanding. But it says, even a fool, when he keeps silent, is considered wise. When he closes his lips, he's counted prudent. So before you attain to prudence, before you become wise, you can be considered wise and counted prudent just by keeping your mouth shut. Because when you open your mouth, you sometimes give away the fact that you haven't yet attained to wisdom and prudence. But you can appear wise, and that will enhance your reputation. The other way in which your reputation will be improved by this habit of restraining your lips, number two, you'll be a good example. At least you'll begin to be a good example. Paul, talking to Timothy, sets him up to be an example to his church. Timothy was a young church leader. People tended to look down on him because he seemed so young. And Paul says to Timothy, "Let no one look down on your youthfulness, but rather in all these things show yourself an example of those who believe." And the first thing he lists is speech. We are to strive to be examples in speech. And if you can't be an example of a positive speaker saying good things, that's the glory goal, then at least you can be an example of a person who doesn't say bad things. And in doing so, you'll appear wise, and in doing so, you'll begin to be a good example. So your reputation will be greatly enhanced by your ability to restrain your lips. And then thirdly, in terms of big, significant improvements that come by restraining your lips, number three, you will improve... Number three, your relationship with people. Not only your reputation before people, but your relationship with people. Proverbs 18 says, "A fool's lips bring strife." These are just almost random selections of many dozens and dozens of proverbs that have to do with the same thing. Speaking less, speaking carefully, being cautious. A fool's lips bring strife. Who do they bring strife to? Everybody connected with that fool. A fool's lips bring strife, and his mouth calls for blows. A fool's mouth is his ruin. When a person says, oh, me and my big mouth, you can tell they're onto something. It's true. Your big mouth can get you into all kinds of trouble if by big you mean incautious in your words. James, again, very, very clear. He's the one who says that your religion is worthless if you do not bridle your tongue. And he says this in James chapter 3 about the tongue. He says, no one can tame the tongue. He says, the tongue is a fire. It's a fire, the very world of iniquity. The tongue is set among our members as that which defiles the entire body and sets on fire the course of our life and is set on fire by hell. Every species of beasts and birds, of reptiles and creatures of the sea is tamed and has been tamed by the human race. But no one can tame the tongue. It's a restless evil and full of deadly poison. Well, that's speaking apart from the power of God. But by the power of God, we can. By the power of the Holy Spirit, we can bear the fruit of the Spirit, which would involve taming the tongue, but we need God's help to do it. And so we should look to God to do it, because he means for us to be in loving relationships with one another, and our relationship with people will be greatly enhanced by our learning to restrain our lips. A fool's lips bring strife, and his mouth calls for blows. A fool's mouth is his ruin. The next proverb, 18:13, is an illustration of a way in which the mouth can be your ruin. He who gives an answer before he hears, it is foolishness, it is folly, and a shame to him. Speaking quickly and not being slow, quick to hear, but quick to speak, is foolishness and shows you to be a fool. So you can improve your relationship with people and your reputation, and ultimately your relationship with God, by restraining your lips, by listening to wisdom as she shouts, don't talk so much. Now, it would be simple if we could simply draw the line there and say, okay, well, I won't talk at all. In fact, that might be sort of a response that you get from people. As you say, you know, you really shouldn't talk so much. And say, well, okay, fine, I won't talk at all. But we can't have that, because you need to talk in order to fulfill the will of God. Ephesians chapter 2 describes us as the workmanship of God, created in good works, created in Christ Jesus for good works, which we are foreordained to walk in, which are foreordained for us. We are God's workmanship, and he means for us to do good. And some of that good requires speech. Some of that good is speech. The good works that God plans for us sometimes is the good work of speaking words of encouragement or kindness or forgiveness or direction to people. So we need to talk in order to be God's workmanship. Ephesians chapter 4 speaks about the need not only to be careful about our words, but to get on with our words. Ephesians 4:29 is very helpful. It says, don't let any unwholesome word proceed from your mouth. Don't let any unwholesome word proceed from your mouth, but only such a word as is good for edification or for building up, according to the need of the moment, so that it will give grace to those who hear. There are situations you will be in where God means to extend grace to people, and the way that God means to give grace to the person is through you. You're on the spot then in a good work which has been foreordained for you to walk in, to speak a word that's good for edification. And you sin against God. It's a sin of omission by failing to speak when God calls you to speak. So you have to speak. We're called to. Ephesians chapter 5, verses 18 and 19 says the same thing. It says, don't get drunk with wine, for that's a waste, but be filled with the Spirit, speaking to one another in psalms and hymns and spiritual songs. One of the purposes for which God fills you with the Spirit is to get you speaking encouraging words to people. So we have to speak. So here's our dilemma. We must speak in order to obey God, but the more we speak, the more likely we are to sin and to provoke people to tempt us to sin. So what are we going to do? Let me give you two really practical rules which have been a tremendous help to me, a blabbermouth to the core, in sinning less than I would sin if I didn't have these rules to live by. Here are two rules that are very, very helpful. Number one, rule one, take time to ask yourself, here's the question you should learn to ask yourself, will these words be helpful now? Will these words, that is the words that I feel like saying right now, will they be helpful now? It's not enough to stop the sentence one word short and say, will these words be helpful? Because you can end up excusing all kinds of things in the name of helpfulness. This will be good for him to hear this. It may not be a good time, but never mind that. I'm just going to say it because it'll be helpful. Yeah, but if it's not helpful now, then it's not helpful. In fact, it will be foolishness to speak helpful words. They'll be wasted. They'll provoke a person to sin instead of encouraging them to obedience. So Ephesians 4:29 says, let no unwholesome word proceed of your mouth, but only that which is good for edification, Proverbs 15 says, a man has joy in an apt answer. How delightful is a timely word? Now, it's a matter of objective truth that we think more quickly than we speak. An average rate of speaking, in terms of speaking quickly, is 125 words a minute. That's sort of clipping along smartly. That's an average speaking rate, 125 words a minute. You'd be a real motor mouth if you can push it to 175. Nobody can do 200. That's really fast. Okay, so talking, you know, at a smart pace is like 125 words a minute. But we can think at about 450 words a minute. There's a much different speed rate at which you can think. You can think a lot of things that you don't have time to speak. You know that. I mean, some real motor mouths do their best to catch up, and some people talk as if they're going direct from the brain to the, they're just saying whatever pops into their head and trying to keep up with it, and it's not even a complete sentence and so on. But they're not. Everybody can think faster than they can speak. This is a talent that God has given you that allows you to think about what you're going to say before you say it, even when you're thinking quickly. Now, it's harder when you're thinking quickly. But no matter how quickly you're speaking, you can think faster, and you can think about what you're going to say. And you can experiment on this to see that it's true. You can easily put a ban on certain sort of words. You do that all the time, right? There's a way you speak to some people that you wouldn't speak to other people. Like, I hardly ever hear anybody swear in the foyer when they're talking to me. I don't know what it is. Don't say that word. That's pastor. You know, people. You put a lid on certain things, right? And you have a way of speaking to some people that you would never think of speaking to another person if you accidentally did go oops. But you could, you know, if you're on your toes, you stop. We can do this in the most arbitrary sort of way. Like watch this. Let's just do this. Let's put a ban on ourselves. Let's say we're going to count to 20 out loud. We're going to count from 1 to 20 out loud. But we are going to refuse to utter a word that has the letter E in it, okay? We're going to count from 1 to 20 out loud, but we're not going to say any words that have the letter E in it, okay? Let's do this. You can do this. You can think about what you're going to say before you say it and then speak accordingly. Okay, ready? 2, 4, 6. That's it. Okay, you can do that, right? You can think it through. Oop, all those E's, 13, 14, 15, I can't say those words. You can do that. You can put a clamp on yourself. You can say, I won't say that. In fact, you do that. There's no reason why you can't do that in terms of pleasing God, in terms of Ephesians 4:29. No unwholesome words, but only words which build others up. So then the question you impose upon yourself at 450 words a minute is, would these words be helpful now? And I can say without fear of contradiction, when I have successfully followed that rule, I've gone away from conversations with little or nothing to regret. And when I have forgotten that rule, I often go away from a conversation with something to regret. Whether I'm wise and godly enough to regret it or not is sort of beside the point. But I ought to regret things I say when I don't think, will these words be helpful now? And what a group of people we would be if this principle which we believe in, we successfully committed ourselves to. That's the first. Will these words be helpful now? And the second rule is to remember. This is just sort of a little trick of the mind. Remember that you're talking into a microphone. Now, you're not, but pretend that you are. I learned this lesson really early in my relationship to Debbie Street, who went to Milford Junior High and then married me some years later. And when she and I were just dating, and I brought her to the guy who was discipling me because I wanted to impress him with the terrific, good-looking, godly young woman that I had landed. We spent an afternoon together, Debbie and me, and this guy that I was very careful to impress. And Debbie used to do some singing. She's a long way away tonight, so I can say this without getting in trouble. She used to play guitar and sing a lot of solos in camp settings and so on. And Phil was interested in this, and he was a sort of a tech guy. He had a tape recorder. So we went over to his house, and the stated purpose was that she was going to sing some of her songs for a tape recording. He was going to tape it. So we did this thing, and it was great because I got to show her off, and I was just absolutely dazzled by her, and she's playing her guitar and singing these folk songs in this 1970s kind of way, and I was falling more desperately in love by the song, and Phil was taping, right? And when the taping was over, we just talked for a while, just getting to know each other sort of thing. What I didn't know and what Phil didn't mean to do is that the tape recorder kept running. And so then later on, we got to hear ourselves having small talk. This is a very painful but valuable lesson. It turned out, because we were spending the afternoon on music, that we got talking about the choir at the church that Debbie grew up in. And I wasn't a big church guy at the time, and I was, you know, quick to point out the weaknesses and foibles of churches. And Debbie wasn't a great fan of the choir. And so we had a candid conversation about what the choir was like. We didn't mean to be mean. We didn't mean to be nasty sounding. We didn't mean to be overly sarcastic and cruel. But when we heard the tape playing afterwards, it happened like this. Phil said, the tape's still on. Hold on, turn it off. I'll just go back to where the songs were. And he rewound, and then he pushed play to see if he's back the songs. And poof, there it is on the tape recording, me and my girlfriend sounding like the nastiest, most mean-spirited, critical 19-year-old creeps that you could possibly imagine. And I was horrified because I was trying to look like a godly young man to this dazzling young girl. And I sounded like an awful person. And I thought to myself, how helpful would it be if I developed the practice of just imagining that the tape recorder was always running? And the scripture gives us a warrant for this idea, for it says in Luke chapter 12, these are the words of Jesus, there's nothing covered up that will not be revealed, and hidden that will not be known. Accordingly, whatever you've said in the dark shall be heard in the light, and what you've whispered in the inner rooms about your girlfriend's choir shall be proclaimed upon the housetops. And Matthew 12 says it even more vibrantly. I say to you that every careless word that men shall speak, they shall render account for it in the day of judgment. For by your words you shall be justified, and by your words you shall be condemned. If you have ever said, me and my big mouth, it's probably because something that you shouldn't have said but you did say got back to the person you were talking about. That's usually the scenario. And what if a little guy walked around with a tape recorder? And every time you talked about anybody else, he just turned the tape on and held the microphone up to your mouth. And in his back pocket was a set of tapes with labels, so that when you finished talking about that person, he just pulled the tape out of the tape recorder, put on the label the name of the person you're talking about and the address, and mailed it off to that person so that person could hear what you said about that person. That would certainly change things, wouldn't it? Well, it would change things, and it's the way that things should change. That is, we demonstrate this rule and live by it. I'll speak words that are wholesome, but I won't speak any words that are unwholesome. I'll ask myself this question, will these words be helpful now? And I'll do it with as much vibrancy and realism as if the very thing I'm about to say about some person is going to be repeated to that person exactly. In actual fact, it probably will be repeated, not quite exactly, but close enough to get you in a lot of trouble. Close enough to get you into the situation where you say, oh boy, me and my big mouth. Well, wisdom shouts to us, restrain your lips, and if you do, your relationship with God and your reputation and your relationship with people will be greatly enhanced. These are the words of wisdom to us tonight.